On this episode of Narcissist Apocalypse, we talk with an abuse survivor named Valentine. And Valentine was married to a controlling religious abuser. It's a story of conditioning, isolation, jealousy, sexual abuse, and parental alienation. Welcome to Narcissist Apocalypse, everyone. I am Brandon Chadwick, and with me today, we have Valentine. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you for asking, and thank you for being here. And if you want to be a guest like Valentine is today, please do go to our website at narcissistapocalypse.com and click on the guest form button at the top of the page. There you can read all of our instructions, and please read them all and either send us an email at narcissistapocalypse@gmail.com or fill out our guest form and press the submit button, and please do send it in the format that we ask for. And we do have a content warning for this episode, as we do mention sexual abuse, sexual assault, and sexual coercion in this episode. So that is your content warning for today. And today you're going to hear Valentine's story. And Valentine was conditioned to accept the way her husband was for a very long time. Jealousy, control, put downs, isolation. Valentine was living in his world, the abuser's world, in his world ruled all. And I know Valentine is going to validate many of your experiences today. So a big thank you to Valentine for being here today once again. And now I'm going to get it my way and your way. Valentine, the floor is now yours.
Well, hi. Thank you for having me on the show. My ex-husband, he's very covert. So a lot of this stuff that I talk about is I didn't figure out until, you know, way later. I had to really study his patterns and just to figure out what he was doing. So anyways, I'll start with my childhood. Grew up in Lake Tahoe. My mom took us away from everybody, and I grew up Christian, and my parents were very involved with the ministry, and they still are. I have one older brother. I'm the second oldest, and then I have another younger brother and a younger sister. We just grew up regular Christian life, and my mom was a very hands-on mother. She, when you look at her from the outside, everybody loved her, and she was a good mom. She homeschooled us. She always tried to give us the best opportunities, and we would do a lot of hiking, camping, outdoor activity and stuff. But later, or not later, like when I was around 3 or 5, between 3 to 5 years old, I got molested. And later in life, I asked my mom about it, and she didn't know that I got molested. She said that she thought it was because my sister was born. But she noticed that I was a very goofy, silly child, and I was a lot of fun. And then I just shut down. So she just assumed that it was because of my sister, like the typical thing where they get jealous that the other child is going to get the attention now or something like that. So then after that, I always had, you know, the model of, you know, I was always taught the Christian life. And I remember my mom used to say that marriage was a solidified thing in our family too. You're supposed to stay married, you know, forever. And I remember my mom saying that people are only affectionate when they first get married because they're just anticipating sex. And that always kind of stuck with me because I was like, well, that's not like really fun. And I didn't really like the way my parents' marriage was because they just kind of seemed like bickering siblings. And I never really got along with my mother either. And I never really knew why, because she, you know, like I said, on the outside, she seemed like a good mother. When we were kids, my sister would always, you know, be a little annoying sister that would pester everybody because she just wanted to be included or whatever. And she was like a little goofy child too, always wanting attention. And my mom would always take her side. So I think my sister took that pattern. So then later, I would say stuff like that, and my mom would be like, well, you're just jealous of your sister because, you know, she gets everything she wants. So anyways, my mom, I realized later that I always had resentment towards her because she didn't protect me. And then there were other issues. Like, I would always be trying to bring up issues to her about my life. Like, I would talk about, yeah, you're never present with me. You're always like this and this, like you have to always have, it's always like you're rushing to get to the next thing. And I used to joke with my sister that she's kind of like the white rabbit on Alice in Wonderland, where it's just hurry, you have a little stopwatch and I have a checklist. So I also kind of felt like a checklist to my mother. And when I would tell her the things that I resented about her, she would just get defensive and say I'm not perfect or whatever. But a lot of other things too would be like when I would over years of my life, like trying to tell her my issues, she would just defend everybody else. When I'd be like, yeah, that one time when I was a little kid and I went over to your friend's house because, you know, we had homeschool group people, and I would go over to their house and the parent would do something crazy. Like, this one mom yelled at me because I told her friend that her mom is kind of annoying. So her friend told her mom that. And I was eating breakfast and her mom came up to me, swept off all the food off the table, shoved it out of my face and screamed and yelled at me. And so like little things like that happened, or I got shamed from this another friend of my parents that he spanked me in front of all his siblings. But anyways, I would tell these stories to my mother and she would defend the other person. And she'd be like, well, nobody's perfect. Oh, you know, he's just, you know, he doesn't know what he's doing. And that used to always anger me.
So listening to your childhood, you know, your mom is dismissive, there's neglect, she's not having your back, and now you're feeling alone and you don't really have a confidant. You know, trust has been eroded here. Your worth has been robbed of you as no one is seeing you. So a lot has happened as far as your inner world goes, your self-worth goes. So from here, let's talk about the first meeting of your future ex-husband, the person that this story is about.
Okay, so I met my ex-husband at church. He was kind of a quiet guy, and he's the oldest of nine siblings. He grew up very Pentecostal, but I met him like when I was around like a teenager, maybe 18 or so. And I was in and out of church because I was still like a Christian, but the church we were going to was very, I don't know, like spiritual, you know, prophetic and all that. So I would show up randomly, and I remember seeing him, and he started like pursuing me and we started hanging out, but he wasn't like exactly my type, you know, but he started acting like crazy and he started to do wacky things, and I was like, oh, maybe he is my type. And I had just had a falling out with somebody that I was like in love with, like one of my childhood best friend. And I think subconsciously I was like, well, I'm not going to get anybody else, and he's actually hitting on me. And then he started to be very spiritual, so we started going to these youth groups at my parents' house that my parents started, and I would go, you know, because I, you know, whatever. And we had these prayer sessions, and he would say prophetic things, and I was like, wow, that's really impressive. And then he even told me later that God had told him that I was supposed to be his wife. So that impressed me too. My ex-husband, he came from a large family, the oldest of nine, and they went to a Pentecostal church in their early days, and they had talked about, his family had talked about later how it ruined them, the Pentecostal church. But his mom was a stay-at-home mom, and his dad was like never there because he was in the military. So the mom was always, she was very sarcastic. I feel like she was never emotionally there, like the times that I knew her. And so I feel like he didn't have any emotional support from both his parents. And there's many stories that like revealed that to me. And he was also molested in that church. And his sister was. So I feel like that had a lot to do with the way that he is. So we got married pretty quickly. He asked my dad's my hand in marriage. He was all about respect and, you know, being look, you know, appearing to be like a religious man. So the first couple years of marriage was fine. There were plenty of like red flags, which I'll tell some of those stories, but I realized the first couple of years of marriage, we had a routine. We both had the job. Like I worked at like Starbucks or something, and he had his regular job, and we would go to our jobs, we'd come home and we would hang out and we'd have sex and drink alcohol. Like we would do that for 2 years straight. And I remember at one time we had some friends. We weren't very social outside of our marriage. It was like, I was like, we had that routine. And I remember even one of my cousins would get upset because I used to hang out with my cousin a lot before I got married, and I didn't hang out with anybody because that I was following this routine. And so one time we went to our neighbors for a party, and I was like, oh, this is great, you know, an extrovert deep down inside. So I was like, oh, this, you know, I missed the social part. And he wanted to go home. And so I was like, no, I don't want to go home. And so I stayed. This was in the very beginning of our marriage. So I stayed and I hung out. And then when I got back to the house, he was like in the house mad. He was like sitting there quiet and pissed at me. And I was a little bit buzzed. So I said, well, if I would have known you were going to be this way, I wouldn't have married you. Or I said something like that, because he said that he expected me to be in bed with him every single night. And I'm not supposed to be, you know, that's my obligation as his wife. He said something along those lines. And I was like, oh, I do not like that at all. And then he gave me the silent treatment, which is a pattern that he's done whole entire, like he does it to me now too. But I wasn't used to the silent treatment. It really bothered me, but we never resolved that issue. He just didn't talk to me about it for a couple of days. And then I felt bad that he was so upset at me.
So here's a moment in those 2 years where you think everything is quiet, but in reality, you are actually conforming to his routine and you are isolated, even though it may not have looked that way. This outing shows that if you don't conform here, you know, you get the silent treatment as if you did something wrong, which isolates you even further. It makes you think that you're doing something wrong. And you also learn that he's using religious beliefs or misogynistic beliefs about your role here too. And he's, you know, saying this to exert control over you. So were there any other incidents like this at the time?
So then there were other instances like that. Like one time we went out to this art gallery because I'm an artist, and I was dressed cute. And this was when, before we had kids, and I was still like, I wasn't like that overweight or whatever. So I looked good and we were hanging out, and all of a sudden he says, what are you looking at? And I look at him and I look across the room, and he's like yelling at some guy that I guess was looking at me. So he always had this possessive thing. And that was like one of the first instances where I'm like, wow, like maybe a little part of me was like, oh, he's like really, you know, possessive over me. It like felt good a little bit, you know, but at the same time, it was weird and it was embarrassing that he was yelling at some man for looking at me. So there were a lot of instances like that in the first couple years of our marriage before I started having babies, where we had to stay in that routine. Guys weren't supposed to look at me or whatever. And even one time, cousin, the one that was upset that we stopped hanging out, we were at a family dinner one time, and my cousin is an awesome guy. He's just a really affectionate guy. Nothing weird about him. He's super loving. And we were standing in line at the restaurant, and he started to touch my back, you know, in the caring way. And out of nowhere, my ex-husband slapped his hand off my shoulder. And me and my cousin were like, just like stunned. What is going on?
So right here, there's jealousy, and it's a raging type of jealousy, very possessive, seems out of control, fly off the handle, yelling at a stranger, and then slapping your cousin. cousin's hands. So this person can get physical. You're seeing it. Fear can be instilled here. You know it's brewing underneath him. So from here, you eventually do start having kids. So what happens from here?
After a few years of our routine or whatever, I started getting pregnant and I started having babies. And I really feel like having the babies was a huge part of him keeping me in the nest, because then he wouldn't have to worry about me leaving him, which was a huge pattern that I, you know, I realized, because like after having a baby, you know, I'd gain like a bunch of weight, and I always thought he'd be like, oh, that's, you know, you need to lose weight, you're chubby, but he didn't care. He said one time, as long as you don't lose your butt, because he was a butt man. But I was miserable a few times after having some of my babies because I couldn't lose the weight. Like I gained a lot of weight. And so as soon as I started lose weight and I started working out and started feeling good, I would tell him too. I would make sure to tell him, please don't bring me any of my favorite foods because I'm really miserable. I would try to really tell him, like, I don't like being overweight. It makes me very unhappy. And I was very depressed about it. And then every single time, the next day, I would tell him that he'd bring my favorite junk food that I couldn't say no to, like French fries or donuts or whatever. So after, you know, years, I realized that he didn't want me to look good or feel good because that is a threat to his insecurity. I'll leave him, you know, or something, or I'll cheat on him, which is crazy because I am the most loyal person to when I'm with somebody, I'm like completely loyal, and I was completely loyal to him. But I honestly was completely miserable because the routine changed, because in the first few years that was the routine, like I said before, was, you know, we would just be together, we drink and have sex every night, and that's how it was. But when I started having babies, the routine was I was in charge of everything. I was in charge, you know, he had his routine of going in the morning. He always had a stimulant of some kind. I realized his pattern. In the morning, he would have to have coffee. One point, he had to have chewing tobacco. And then he would work his butt off at work. He was a really good worker. He was always really good at that. He was very efficient. He became a boss. He's really good at that. Then when he got home, he would be completely exhausted, and the first thing he would do was drink beer. And he never helped me with the kids. So he came home, drank beer, I would make dinner, and he wouldn't even eat dinner with us because he wanted to drink a whole six pack of beer before dinner. And then he would eat dinner later and he would drench it in hot sauce. Then after dinner, I put the kids to bed, and that time for me was like, okay, now I can relax. So I used to try to relax and be on my own and do my art stuff or create things, but he was waiting for me because I was his last stimulant, which was sex. So that was our married life pattern. So over the years, I got really resentful because I was overwhelmed because I did everything. And then at the end of the night, I couldn't even relax. He didn't help me. And then I couldn't relax because I was expected to be his stimulant. And that also made me realize that in this part with the sex part was also where he used religion to manipulate me, because I started to feel like I was being molested. Like I started to get triggered after a couple years with sex. So after like I started getting a little bit triggered from being molested, and I realized much later, because I was always trying to figure out like why I hated sex. I hated it because I would tell him like, I feel like I'm being molested. Can we just have like regular sex? Because a lot of times it was, you know, it was all about stimulation for him. It was never about like connection. Like he couldn't like focus on enjoying sex with me because he needed to be stimulated. And with my search of trying to figure out like our sex problems, I was like, well, it's kind of like we're filming a porno because he's not connecting with me. He's just, he didn't enjoy the actual sex part because it wasn't stimulating enough.
And also right there to explain a little bit more, we won't go into details, but he had a specific fetish that he manipulated you into constantly taking part in. And he used religious beliefs of a man and his wife, that type of stuff, to convince you of this. And you then end up in therapy to deal with what is going on with this specific issue. So what happens from here?
I would go to therapy because he would tell me, well, it's because, you know, you were molested and that's your triggers. And he would just basically tell me to get over my triggers of being molested. So I went to therapy for a long time, and that was like the main focus. I need to heal my being molested because I'm the problem, that I'm not giving myself to him. So he would use like the Bible scripture of, you're not giving yourself to me. There's some Bible scripture saying that my body is supposed to be his. He would play the victim. I waited till I was married to have sex, and you're supposed to be mine. You know, you're supposed to give all of yourself to me. So when I went to therapy, I remember telling my therapist, I'm at the end of it. I hate my husband. I don't know why. I don't want to have sex anymore. And I told her the things that he like insisted on doing. And she like looked so sad, and she looked at me and she's like, you never have to do anything that you don't want to do. And I didn't believe her because he had made me feel so guilty for not giving my whole self to him, because that's what I was supposed to do as a wife, that he had conditioned me so much to feel bad that sex was that I was the reason our sex was bad. So I was like, are you sure? Like, I'm like his wife, you know, and she was also a Christian therapist too. But she's like, no, you're not obligated to do things. It's like you have an open wound that keeps getting exposed and touched, and you're not able to heal it. So I remember being so happy after that therapy session. I'm like, I don't have to like do these things that he insists on doing with me. So I remember going home and telling him that, and he was like so mad, and like I had felt free, and he was pissed because he could no longer do things the way he wanted to do them. But which is crazy, because after that, like after time went by, he was so insistent about his needs that it slowly went back to that again. But near the end, I just couldn't do it anymore. And I started to like drink alcohol because I thought, well, if I get like drunk, then he can just have his way with me or whatever. And I can't get him to have sex the way I want to have sex because he couldn't connect with me emotionally. Okay. So after near the end of my marriage, when I just felt guilty about being miserable, the kids were older, so I started to have a little bit of freedom because they were more independent, and I started taking them to jiu-jitsu. My sister was like, come take your kids here or whatever. And I would stay and watch the class, and the owner would tell me like, you should stay after for self-defense classes. And I was like, yes, I so badly wanted to do that. And it was like a family deal or whatever. So I was like, oh, okay, my husband will be fine with that, because he was also always very controlling about money. So I was like, well, I get to train for free. And so I took a class, started taking self-defense classes after the kids took classes. And I remember he got so mad when I told him I was taking the self-defense classes. And I was like, why? Like, it's good for girls to have self-defense classes. But at the same time, I think I knew that he would be mad because he always conditioned that in me. Like, I could never really do anything outside of the marriage that like involved me interacting with other people, like men or anybody that was like a threat. So I was like, whatever, you know, like I kept going. And then I started to see the jiu-jitsu. They had also had jiu-jitsu, which is very close contact sport. And the people at the dojo started telling me like, you should do jiu-jitsu as well. And they're like, it's not that pricey or whatever. And I sat there and I was like, he would never, my ex-husband would, or my husband then would never let me do jujitsu ever. That's way too close contact. Then I had this moment because the self-defense classes were so like liberating for me because it felt so good, you know, that part of me, you know, I've always been like that, like a fighter inside or a rebel or something, you know, that's always been inside of me. I think it was just shut down, you know, for so many years, or like the goofy side of me, the fun side of me. But I had this moment and I was like, you know what? I'm almost 40. I can't live my life like this. I don't care if he gets mad at me. So I remember being scared and I went and told him, I was like, I'm going to do jujitsu classes. And as soon as I told him, I ran and hid in the backyard because I knew that he was going to be pissed and that he wouldn't let me, or he would just make me sit and argue with him for hours. And that's what he usually did. If he didn't like something, he would insist that I sit there with him for hours just talking to him about, until he got his way. He would just repeat himself and it would turn into this mind effery, you know? So that's why I ran and hid. Like, I knew that was going to happen. So he luckily didn't, I mean, I don't know why I thought that he could stop me, you know, but I guess the conditioning of being married to him for so many years. But instead, he tried to talk to me a few times, and I was like, why don't you want me to do jujitsu? And I was like, it's not sexual. There's nothing, you know, nothing's going to happen. I'm not going to cheat on you just because I'm touching another man. And he never could really answer my question because he didn't have a reason except his own insecurity. So the only thing he basically said was, because I'm the head of the house, and that's where he used religion, I'm the head of the house and you're disrespecting me when you were telling me that I can't, that you're going to do it anyways. And he said, that's what matters. And he used that like religious thing on me from then on. He would follow me around the house and tell me that I needed to submit because he's the head of the house.
So just to recap here and also mention that within these years, he put you down, he put your artwork down, the things you found joy in the most. So this is just really what's going on here. It's his world, his joys. You're living in it, just to emphasize all of that. And everything is his way of doing things. And you gave a great example here of the conversations. They sound like they were circular conversations and you just be in them, and it's tiring and it's worn you down. So here you get this joyful thing and you remember what joy is when it comes to, you know, the martial arts stuff. And all it takes is one thing like this for you to remember your independence and the joy of it. And it sets you on a road. And it sounds like you can see what he's doing more, and things become a little bit clearer, and you are standing up for yourself more and more from this point. You know, the more he will, and then the more you're doing that, the more he will try and use his control mechanism, which is religion, to put you in your place. So after this starts, you know, what happens from here?
He just started losing it. Like, he started turning into a different person. Like, he started spying on everything I did. He went to he started doing jujitsu, even though it wasn't his thing. And he went to every single class. And if he couldn't go to the class and watch me, then he would send my oldest daughter to spy on me. And she actually, I don't know how he told her, but she didn't even want to go, but she tried to say that she needed my phone to look something up when I was in class. And she read all my text messages. He was suffocating me. Ever since I did jujitsu, he would like follow me around. He started to act like he was jealous. And I was like, wait a minute. Like, you're saying that I don't like you anymore and you're acting jealous, but like, why do you love me? I want you to tell me why you love me. And that was like, I caught him off guard and he couldn't answer my question. And then he finally did. And the only things he could say was, you're modest, you're beautiful, and you're a good mom. But that's all he could say. And I realized, well, that's because those are all safe things for you. I'm me being modest, Christian modest girl is gonna make you not worry as much because I won't cheat on you or leave you. Me being beautiful is just, that's not who I am, and beauty fades. And being a good mom, well, yeah, because that doesn't make me who I am either. You know, everybody should be a good mom because you're a mother, they're your children. So I realized that I was never liked. I was just the housekeeper. Basically, when I look back at my whole entire marriage, I was just there to, stimulate him sexually, take care of the home, and the kids were there to keep me in the nest so that I wouldn't leave him. But the crazier it got, the more I realized this is just crazy. And I started to do research on him because I knew there's something going on. And I finally came to the narcissist. I couldn't identify it because he's very non-social. He's very quiet. He didn't hang out with anybody. So when I heard of a narcissist, I always thought it was somebody who was loud or, blunt about, super confident or something, but he wasn't like that at all. But then I came upon the covert narcissist, and he freaking marked every single box of a covert narcissist. And then it said, you're not supposed to tell them that they're a narcissist. And I just started educating myself a lot. And then I made the mistake of also telling him one time. I was like, I found this video, we can fix our marriage. We have this toxic cycle. And he hated it. He had the exact reaction that you read about narcissists, where they just get mad because the more you expose, the more they get manipulative, because they don't want to be exposed. They don't want to face themselves, because that's the whole reason they're a narcissist, is they don't want to face themselves. But it just got worse and worse. And so then I was like, you know what? I want a separation, because I still had the ingraining of you can't get divorced, because that's not how it is. That's how I was raised. And even when I told my mom and dad about wanting a divorce, they were so upset and disappointed, which was like a double whammy too, because not only did my parents not know that I had been traumatized as a child and I was neglected in that area, then they lived next door to me for my whole entire marriage and didn't know that I was being abused because he was covert about it. And my parents had no idea. And then they were disappointed that I wanted to get divorced. So that double invalidated me, if that's a word, because they had no idea what their daughter had been going through. And I already felt extremely guilty for wanting to divorce as a Christian. And I had no support from anyone. But the more research I did about narcissism, I realized that there's never going to be a good marriage, especially with him, because the more I dug deep, the crazier he got, the more controlling he got. He would spy on everything. All the accounts were in his name. So then as soon as I told him that I wanted a separation just to breathe at first, he moved all the money into some other account that I couldn't access and started spying on me through every single channel that you could spy on somebody. And he asked for my location every single day. He was the account manager of our phones, and I had no idea that he was spying on me through that. And I came in the house one time and I sent a text message, and it went straight to his computer and to the other phones. And then I realized later that he was looking at all my photos and reading all my text messages. And my aunt at the time also was, actually, she was the only supportive person at the time. And I don't think he realized that she would tell me to get a divorce, because my aunt was a Christian too. And she had dealt with a narcissist that really screwed her over. So she was supposed to send me a check to help me go see a lawyer. And the lawyer, because I didn't have any money, because he put all the money in a secret account. But the only money that he left was the kid's savings, which later screwed me over. But then I never got the letter from my aunt, because I'm I'm almost because he was spying on the phone, so I knew he took the letter and took the money. But there was a lot of little controlling things that he did during that time, because then I finally decided I'm going to divorce him. And my aunt sent me another check to go to the lawyers, because I also realized when you find out about narcissists, you can't go through negotiation and go through work. You can't work things out with them, because they'll figure out how to make it all about them, you know. And he always cared so much about money. Like, even when we were married, that was his main thing that he cared about. Money, control, and religion, those were his things that motivated him. So I tried to set up him getting the divorce papers where he'd be by himself, but he like glued himself to the kids as soon as like separation and all that. He didn't like, he was trying to not let me have separation, and I think he was spying on everything, so he knew, which like boggled my mind at the time. I'm like, how did you know that I was going to serve you papers? So my parents, they lived across the way, and they said that when he got served, the kids were with him, and he stood up and started wailing and crying and in front of the kids when he got served the papers. And he had, I came home later, because we couldn't live in separate households. He wouldn't leave, and I couldn't leave either, because I didn't have any money to go live separately. But he had all the kids around him, and they were all crying, and he was just like having a little sob thing, which was an act. And I remember he immediately started telling the kids that the government was going to take him away, and that I was breaking up the family, and it was all my decision to divorce him, and why is mommy breaking up the family? Because my kids would come up to me and be like, Mom, like, why are you doing this? And telling me that the government was going to take dad away. And I was like, what does that even mean? I don't get it. And my daughter drew this sad little picture of the family split up and me on the side, because I was the ruiner of our family. And then he immediately started doing the religious thing where he started making them do Bible study like every single day. And I realize now that was him using religion when it benefited him, because he didn't do that when we were married and with the kids, and we barely even went to church. Like, it was, you know, our routine. He didn't need to use religion. But he had this like long Moses rod too. It was just disturbing. But during the waiting process of the divorce finalizing or custody and stuff like that, every night he would make the kids sit around the table during dinner, and he would teach a Bible lesson. And it was, you know, usually boring, and the kids were little and they couldn't help talking, you know. So he would whack the kids with his Moses rod when they would talk. And I would get so angry. I would never sit with them. But I also couldn't tell him to stop doing that with the kids, because, you know, he was the authority or whatever.
So before the recording started, you told me that part of his religious abuse started to snowball because you re-met this couple that you were once friends with. And this couple had changed. The wife had become very subservient to the husband over the years. And your husband was very excited about this. You noticed that he was actually very excited by the look on his face. And this person had started their own church, which your husband also found very enticing as his grip on you was starting to slip. So he eventually starts going to this person's church as you start separating. So what happens from here?
He started going to this guy's church that he had created. And the kids would come back and tell me that they had to sit in the sermon for, you know, a couple hours or however long the sermon was, little kids. And they said that he was preaching about how wives are supposed to be submissive to their husbands, and that's how you're supposed to be as a woman. And I was like, really? This is why he, you know, because I was still like, at that time in the separation, like feeling so guilty for divorcing him. So I think he was trying to pull on the strings of guilt. You broke up the family, and you know, you're breaking the rules of the Bible, which is another lesson that they came home telling me, that I broke the rules of the Bible and stuff like that. So it took like months for our divorce to happen, because it was really hard with the custody. We had to, you know, go through, I don't remember the names, but we had to go and talk to the family court services, I think, about custody, because we weren't in agreement about it. I wanted 75% custody, because my thinking was like, I've always been the primary parent, you know, I've never had a job, you know, like I wanted to work, I wanted to have a job. And this was also during COVID, or like right before COVID. So then we had to battle out, and the first thing he wanted when we started to talk about like the divorce and all the different things that you have in divorce, first thing he did was try to work it out with me out of court, because he didn't want, you know, the money thing, which I understand. But in my thinking, I'm like, there's no way I'm going to not have a lawyer, because he's a narcissist, and he's so strategic about how he manipulates and controls. So he begged me to not go to court. And then the first thing he begged for was 50% custody. And that was horrifying to me. I can't not be around my kids half the time. He would be fine. He's never really present with the kids. Like he's never been a hands-on dad. But then I realized later that one of the ways that child support can be lowered to the lowest possible amount is 50% custody. And the other way is the higher paying job that I have. Like I have to have a full-time high paying job, and that's how another way he can lower the child support. So our divorce lasted like a long time, because we weren't in agreement about that, but he ended up getting 50% custody. And then finally, when we were able to have separate households, I always had, like, everything was fine. We had this 2-2-5 schedule. I mean, it wasn't fine, but I always knew that he would always try to do something. You know, I always had PTSD, and I was going to do something to hurt me. Okay. So the first like year or so when we were divorced, I also knew that less contact with him was the best way. So I always tried to do that, but he always found a way to keep in contact with me. And I hated it, because it was always confusing. Somehow it always ended up being like not fair, because he would push it to benefit him. So an example of that is he created a ledger and to split costs of things. And then over time I would catch him like adding things that didn't even be added. And it was always about making the balance on his favor, that I would always end up owing him money. So I stopped doing that with him, because I was like, no, you know, you just buy things for the kids on your own, and I will too. And like, that's when I started to say, you know what, I just need to have his side of the street and my side of the street, because like whenever I deal with him, it's just this confusing, manipulative situation, and it's always favors him. So he would get mad when I created that boundary. So then he would just punish me by never buying the kids things. And then when the kids needed something, he'd be like, ask your mom. And so my poor kids would get really stressed out, because I also was dealing a lot with like money stuff. You know, it was hard to find work during COVID. And then when I did have a good job, I'd have some psychopath boss that would like be crazy. I had a lot of situations like that. And then I had a lot of car problems. So I wasn't doing good financially. And so he knew that. And that's the other thing too, about like how I've had to deal with the divorce, of he needs to deal with his own side of the street, because when he would know what was going on with me, then that's when he would throw bombs at me. He would try to overwhelm me by throwing all these expenses at me, like putting the kids in activities and stuff like that. But he would do it in such a manipulative way. Like he would tell the kids like, oh, we should sign you up for this sport and this sport. And we have 5 kids together. So on top of me being financially trying to just be okay, and him throwing all these activities at me, and then but telling the kids before he told me about it, because he knew he could charge me half for it, and he knew I was overwhelmed financially, but he would tell the kids first, so that then they would go, oh, mom, they would get all excited and be like, yeah, yeah, and then he would tell them to come tell me because I had to pay half. And so then they would always, this pattern would always happen, and the kids would always get mad at me. And finally, more recently, because I always would feel guilty too. Yeah, like the kids should play sports. They're all good at sports and it's good for them. But I'm drowning financially. So there's just like a lot of stuff like that with the kids. And then more recently, we've always had a schedule too that he created back in the beginning, where he would always take the kids to school. Or no, I would always take the kids to school and he would always pick them up because of our jobs. But at the time, that's how our jobs was. So, you know, like then we didn't have to deal with aftercare and before care. So, but that also became a manipulative situation with my job changes and stuff, because I got like different jobs, and then I finally got like a job that I really liked working at the gym, and he would like mess that up because he'd be like, well, you're not, you know, able to do all these activities, or he'd throw something in there in the mix to make me look bad in front of the kids. And then I ended up leaving that job. And now at this time in my life, I am like so happy with like my situation, because I mean, not completely, but the job I have right now is like, I just work at Instacart, and I've always felt like that's what I'm supposed to do, because it makes me flexible so that I can always be available for my kids, and which it has been perfect, because I'm the one who's always taking them to doctor's appointments. I'm the one who's, you know, been available to like my daughter with all her wrestling schedule, and they need to do this, that. So the availability is perfect. And with the whole career thing, he has used that also to destroy my relationship with my children. So he has, my two oldest daughters don't talk to me anymore, which has ripped my heart out. I like, even just thinking about it, you know, really bothers me. But I finally felt at peace, because this is what I'm supposed to do about my life. And I also am a very creative person. And I started doing this show with my friend, and we talk about everything that is uncomfortable for Christians. And we talk about sex shame, and we talk about, you know, everything. And I know he knows that I'm doing this show. And I talk about him sometimes on the show, and I expose narcissism or whatever. So the instance that happened recently, how he uses religion and control and money, because he can't, like, I've gotten to the point where he can't control me anymore. I realized that he is going after, which he always has, but now he's gone after brainwashing my daughters. And it's starting to seep into my other kids too, to separate, to alienate them from me. And part, so like the most recent instance that happened, well, another way too is like with custody. But so I'll just explain the story that happened with my daughter, my 16-year-old daughter. So she wanted to live with me full time like last year, because of how he is. He's very controlling. So they don't like living with him. So she started living with me full time, and that like really pissed him off, because that was right around the time when my oldest daughter started living with him, because she's very type A, very much like him. So she wanted more of a schedule and more things available to her that I couldn't provide for her, like driving and stuff like that, because I had a lot of car problems. And then he started brainwashing her, and now she won't talk to me. But so my other daughter, when she started living with me full time, that ruined his plans to lower child support, because he won't have as many kids at his house with the custody. So then I started telling my daughter, like, you know, how I, you know, like how I'm more into like witchy stuff now, and I'm more like, I'm not Christian, as you know, anymore. And I never really fully told my kids this, because I knew it bothered them, because like I had said a while ago, actually that doesn't matter, but because when the kids were little, like my sons would call me when they're at his house and would cry and say that I'm going to hell. So, but I started to get really close to my daughter. And so I thought it was safe to, tell her things like that. And she was horrified when I told her this stuff. And she's like, I do not like that. And she started to get really bothered. And I told her, I was like, and I'm just going to stay working at Instacart and I can be flexible for you guys. And she got really upset at that too. And then she went to her dad's house for a weekend because she hadn't been living with him. But she went there for a weekend and she came back and she just had this crazy, like nasty attitude towards me. And like she had this self-entitlement and stuff. So then I was mad. I was like, why are you acting like you're so disgusted with me? And we had this big fight, and then she went and stayed with her dad. She went over there, and then she came back at one point, and I was like, please tell me what is wrong, because she wouldn't talk to me. She wouldn't tell me what she was upset about. And she finally explained to me, she just sat there and just screamed, and not screamed, but she yelled and said that I'm not a good mom because I'm working at Instacart and that's not taking care of the kids' needs, and I'd never have the money for anything, and I should have a career. And she doesn't like how I'm like the religious stuff. So that like really turned in my mind, because it really bothered me, because I was like, that I'm finally doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And I also realized that having this job at Instacart also qualifies me for, food stamps and or EBT card, and it also qualifies me for, I was able to get into a bigger apartment with 3 bedrooms instead of 2 bedrooms, and my rent is way lower because of my job. I qualify for it. So I'm getting exactly what I need right now. I'm able to financially recover, and I'm able to, and I also qualify for other programs. Like I just had my son able to go to a kids camp for a week because of my income. And when you have a career, it doesn't just happen like that. You have to be at a company for a while. You have to go to school and stuff like that. So my daughter, I realized that she has been told these things from her father, and he was telling them stuff like how much he pays me in spousal support and child support. And he's like playing the victim over there, saying how he shouldn't be paying me this money and I'm not a good mother because I have this crappy job and stuff like that. But it hit me like, well, that's another way that he lowers child support. Not only did he get his daughter to go live with him full time, which will lower the child support, but he also is not happy that I have this situation because I have lower rent. I have a bigger apartment. Collected in my mind, I was like, that's why she's mad. It's because he's getting in her head. So now at this time in my life, like that is the real pain that has happened, that he has done, that I realized he's done, is like all that religious stuff that he did as soon as we got divorced. Like it stuck with all my kids, and they all are upset that either I'm going to hell or that I'm like this, Jezebel now, according to him, that I'm this breaker of the Bible. Anyways, so now I'm happy with everything else in my life, because I'm like, as long as I'm not like, intertwined with him, with anything. And I also established, we're not going to do this both of us driving to school thingy, and all the kids got mad at me. He got them all to be mad at me about that. But now I established like my own time, like when it's my time, I'm not working anything out with him, and he's pissed about that. But and I really just try to enjoy my life and soak my kids in as much as I can, and not give them any reason to take anything back to him, because now he also uses my reactions. That and that's the other thing my daughter would tell me. She'd be like, you just react and you this, even though I've tried not to react, because I'm a very dramatic person also. Like I have to control my emotions. So like when she was saying all those things to me, it was so painful to hear her say all that when she was telling me why she was upset with me. So even me, like I barely reacted. I just sat there and I probably had a scrunched up face because it was hard. She would point her finger at me immediately and be like, see, you're an adult. You should be like controlling your you know, the way you act and stuff. And I know that's what he tells her because, so I just have to be very careful right now in my life, but I've never been happier. I'm doing what I love doing right now. And I'm finally at a good place financially to be okay if he decided to stop paying child support or whatever, which there's issues with that too, because he's in control of that. But yeah, I'm like in a good place right now because of me following my gut about what I'm supposed to do.
And how has your healing process been?
The healing process has been great. I mean, I think over time, just me forcing myself to do things that were uncomfortable, like when he would go to jujitsu, even though I still had a lot of PTSD in the beginning of our divorce, I would just do it anyways. And now I go all the time with him there, and it's like he's just like another guy, and I don't care about him. I have like I think that really helped my PTSD over the years. And I think just my healing, I think just being happy and just focusing on what I love and not interacting with him as much as possible has also put me above my life and looking down and being like, yeah, he's like a child in a man's body, and he's never going to, like, all the things he does is never going to stop, and you're never going to get resolution with a person like that. So I just have to accept that when he does horrible things. And I'm just, yeah, just the main thing I do is just focus on myself, and I'm just enjoying my life, and I'm doing everything that I love doing, and I'm soaking up the kids that talk to me now. And I think maybe, you know, someday my older two daughters will, you know, see things for the way they are, is my prayer.
And if you had any words of wisdom for everyone listening, what would they be?
Always stand up for yourself, no matter what it causes other people to do. Like, you are the most important, you know, person. Be happy with yourself and have boundaries. I mean, yeah, I think that's one of the main things that I've learned about myself.
Well, Valentine, I really want to thank you for being here today and sharing your story and validating other people's experiences of dealing with someone who, you know, was jealous, you know, abusive, and very controlling, and now is trying to control you through your children. And I'm sorry you had to go through that, but I'm happy that you're here and that you're sharing this today and getting this story out there, because I know it means a lot to you and as far as, you know, your healing process goes. So just a really big thank you for doing this today and also putting up with me and the sound stuff and having to do this again. So just a really big thank you.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you so much.
Well, thank you, Valentine, for being our guest today. And if you want to be a guest like Valentine was today, please do go to our website at narcissistapocalypse.com and click on the guest form button at the top of the page. There you can read all of our instructions, and please read them all, and either send us an email at narcissistapocalypse@gmail.com or fill out our guest form and press the submit button, and please do send it in the format that we ask for. Also at our website, we have a support group. So if you need support, join our support group at narcissistapocalypse.com. Click on the support group button at the top of our page. Inside, you'll see that we have Zoom meetings every Wednesday nights, Thursday afternoons, and Saturday nights. We have forum boards for you to post on to get the validation that you need from survivors just like you. It is a wonderful group of people on there, and you can make a lot of friends too. So if you need support, join our support group today. And if you need even more support, please do visit our friends at domesticshelters.org. At domesticshelters.org, they have articles and resources to help you make sense of everything that you're dealing with. And they have every phone number, email address, and web address for shelters and agencies. No matter how big or small the town you're in, domesticshelters.org has it there. So if you need extra support, please do go to domesticshelters.org. And we have friends of the show called Shelter Movers, everyone. And Shelter Movers can be found at sheltermovers.com. And what they do is they help you move all of your stuff from your home into storage, and that can be your pets and livestock too. So if you're trying to get out of domestic violence and coercive control and you need help leaving the home, getting all of your stuff out of the home and into storage, sheltermovers.com can help you do that. And they are only available in Canada, and it is a donor-supported charitable organization. So if you need help from them or just want to donate to them, go to sheltermovers.com. And that is it for today's survivor story for today's episode. So for myself and Valentine, we hope you have a good night.